Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
In Cardassia, the verdict is always known before the trial begins. And it's always the same.
In that case, why bother with a trial at all?
Because the people demand it. They enjoy watching justice triumph over evil every time. They find it comforting.
Isn't there ever a chance you might try an innocent man by mistake?
Cardassians don't make mistakes.
I'll have to remember that.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Positively Trek Book Club. And in 2024, this year of catching up on Star Trek comics, I'm Dan Gunther, and with me is the ever-effervescent Brandi Jackala. Brandi, how's it going?
I don't know that I've ever been called effervescent before. Thank you, Dan.
You're very welcome. One of my favorite things in this is trying to think of new adjectives.
Yes. Well, buckle in because we've got a lot more comics to cover.
We are going to be talking about volume 2 of the ongoing flagship Star Trek series with Captain Benjamin Sisko and his motley crew aboard the USS Theseus. And I've really been enjoying this kind of shared, weird continuity between the Star Trek comic and the Star Trek Defiant comic. We're, I guess, counting the two series, we're quite a few issues in. What do you think of it so far, Brandi?
Well, I'm really invested in the whole overall story, but I also like the fact that while they're talking about this overall story, all of these other things are happening because that's the way real life is. You know, No matter what the big crisis is, that's not the one thing that you focus on every second of the story. So I appreciate the different viewpoints we're getting from both the Star Trek overall series and Star Trek Defiant, and the way that they're intermingling. It's really difficult to do that when you have these two separate comics and different writers and different schedules of coming out. And it's just all blending together so well. It doesn't feel abrupt in any way. It doesn't feel like, wait, what? And so I think that they're doing a really good job of telling the story across these two series.
Yeah, I agree completely. I'm really invested in the story. And it's interesting you bring up the idea of kind of these things that divert from the main story, because I feel like this volume in particular is kind of the story of that. There's a lot going on in here. And I think Kalis gets mentioned maybe 3 or 4 times. He's not a presence in this novel. We get his followers at a couple points and that sort of thing, but there's really another story going on, and it's an interesting one, especially if you're a fan of Deep Space Nine and are interested in the lore of that series and the Dominion War and the fallout from that. There's some really cool things going on in this graphic novel. So yeah, let's get right into it with, I guess, issue number 7. So this volume, if you're following along with us, if you're reading the individual comics, this is volume 2, The Red Path, and it covers Star Trek issues number 7 to 10 and the Star Trek Annual 2023 comic as well. So 5 issues total, 4 in the regular series, plus that special annual edition, which we will talk about as kind of the last section of this episode. So, all right. So issue number 7 kind of pays off what we were teased at the end of Godchalk, which is the return to Deep Space Nine. We get all these reunions, Sisko reuniting with Cassidy Yates, and finally getting to meet his daughter, Sarah, who in the notes I had to change a couple times because I keep calling her Rebecca because I'm used to the novel continuity and I need to get that out of my brain. This is not that. This is different.
Oh, continuities, you terrible taskmaster, you.
Absolutely. So, yeah, love to see this reunion. There's genuine, of course, love between Sisko and his family and Jake and Cassidy and now Sarah. Sarah's a little bit trepidatious, kind of holding back because there's this man she doesn't recognize. This is her father, but of course she doesn't know him. But as soon as Sisko brings up a family picnic, she's on board. She likes this idea.
Yeah, well, isn't she? I mean, how old is she at this point? Like, Three or so?
Yeah, I'd say three years old.
Yeah. Yeah, she's going to be trepidatious about some guy that she doesn't know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, who is this? Why am I meeting this guy? And then when he says he's her dad, and she's still like, okay.
Hello.
Because, you know, how do you explain the wormhole aliens to a three-year-old?
Well, another bit of trepidation here seems to be on the part of Cassidy Yates. And I like how they've written this where, you know, she doesn't outright say stuff, but you can tell by her demeanor, the way she's kind of reacting to Sisko and some of the stuff she says. She, you know, makes some small comments, but not like anything overt, but you definitely get this feeling that Sisko's, he's aware of this and he's trying to accommodate this, but at the same time, like, Cassidy is just kind of like annoyed by the flippancy with which Sisko is kind of coming back into their lives a little bit.
Yes, I agree with that. And I honestly, I'm on Cassidy's side here. He is not thinking about what it's been like for them while he's been gone. Mm-hmm. He has not been thinking about what his wife has been feeling and thinking and her frustrations and her grief because, you know, she's gone for however, and she had no idea if or when he was coming back. So he's not even really taking any of that into consideration. And I think part of it might be the fact that, you know, he's still relatively new back into regular corporeal time constrained form. And I can write off a little bit to that, but the rest of it is just like, come on, man. Come on. Mm-hmm. Try to have some empathy here.
And I mean, there's obvious love in the faces absolutely. Of both of them, right? But it's complicated. There's stuff going on.
Yeah, she is wary, and she has every right to be wary because she doesn't know how long this is going to last. When is he going to get taken back? And how long is she going to have? And how long will it be gone this time? She's already thinking about all of those things.
Mm-hmm. Because the universe and the prophets, they don't care. Like, no. They don't care about the relationship of these two people, and things continue on, and the Sisko is needed, right? But speaking of things carrying on, of course, the current crisis is still at hand. There's this orb of destruction that Kalis has and is using, and the whole question of the orbs of the prophets, the tears of the prophets, there's still a whole bunch of missing ones. Mm. And Sisko needs to find them. I want to talk a little bit about Sisko and Kira's conversation here, because I really love Kira talking frankly about the prophets and how she's disappointed in what they've done. And that was fascinating to me, given, you know, what we've seen of Kira and her the strength of her faith in the prophets. And we're seeing it getting shook a little bit here, which is really fascinating.
Yeah, well, that's what happens when you are raised to believe that your gods are infallible, and they're not. There's no life form in this entire universe that is infallible. It was fascinating to hear her thoughts on that, and to say that she still maintains faith, but now there's some disappointment, well, a lot of disappointment, and she's not really sure what to do with that yet.
That's interesting just hearing you say that now. I'm seeing the parallels between her and the prophets and Cassidy and Benjamin. Mm-hmm. That's kind of interesting. There's some faith that's been shaken here, and that relationship is on a little bit shakier ground. There's still love, there's still devotion, but there's a little bit of wariness there. That's kind of the theme of this, it seems.
Yeah, well done, Dan. That's great. That's a great observation.
That was all you. I just picked that up. I didn't, I hadn't thought of that until now. That's cool. Well, okay, so Kira knows just the person to help Sisko in his quest. His only mistake is that he joined Starfleet. And we get this amazing introduction. Lieutenant Junior Grade Shax reporting for temporary reassignment from the USS Cerritos, sir. And, like a scion of the prophets, this hulking Bajoran walking in, and that's so great. I was so happy to see him.
Oh, me too, of all the people I thought were going to show up. Shax never even entered my mind, mm-hmm. And then there he is, and I'm just like, I may weep. This is so amazing.
So great. And apparently he's been, or I don't know if he was part of this task force, but he's bringing a report from the Starfleet task force for the reacquisition of Bajoran artifacts and antiquities. And basically everything we knew about the orbs at the end of Deep Space Nine, that's kind of where they're at here. There's a bunch they don't know about. There's the few that we had over the course of Deep Space Nine. There's this orb of destruction that we found out about, and a bunch that are redacted. So I can see why Sisko would find this report unsatisfactory, as he says.
Yeah, there are some that are just big question marks, not even redacted. They're just like, mm-hmm. Don't know what it does, don't know what the effect is, don't know where it is, don't know what it's called, nothing. There's three of those. Three of them.
Yeah. What? I want to know about the redacted ones, too.
Yeah. I gotta wonder, what do they do and what do the Cardassians not want us to know?
Yeah, and the Bajorans too, redacted by Bajoran consul.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, so Shax is going to help the Theseus crew on this mission. They're getting that all lined up. I love seeing him in live, well, not live action, in a more realistic look, I guess, yes. Than we see in Lower Decks. But I think they did a great job. I'll also note that, like, in order to come to Deep Space Nine, he changed from his Cerritos uniform into the standard duty uniform. And then, like, a day later when he joins the Theseus, he's going to change into their style of uniform. Like, man, Starfleet are real fashion hounds. Like, they're, you know, you have to have the exact right uniform for the exact right occasion.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, even in our military, they don't just have one uniform.
That's true,
they have several different things depending on what they're going to be doing that day. So, you know, I can get behind that.
I would love to, by the way, we didn't really talk about this. I'd love to know the story behind the uniforms they wear on the Theseus, because it's just like, we're going on a funky mission. We need some funky uniforms. Like, we need some that are asymmetrical, have weird patches of color, different style of pips. Like, Garrick was like, oh, I've got a project. Okay, I'm going to design your Theseus uniforms.
Oh, and I was going to say, yes, Shax is part of that task force. Not tax force, task force. Good grief. He actually states that in another part of the story.
Okay, right. We've also got a brief bit back on the Theseus where Tom Paris is sticking around on the ship while most of the rest of the crew goes and kind of takes shore leave on Deep Space Nine. But he does stumble across Scotty and Sato and kind of joins them in a bit of recreational alcoholic consumption, I guess.
Yes, they drink. They mm-hmm. drink and they sing and they tell stories. That's what you do, especially with a Scotsman, I mean.
And also, speaking of our kind of secondary cast of characters here, T'Lyr. What's up with T'Lyr?
I was gonna say the same thing. I'm like, what is up with T'Lyr? They are acting weird.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they've always been acting differently than what we would consider a quote-unquote typical Vulcan, which I you know, honestly, I don't think of Vulcans as a typical thing. There are lots of different personalities in there, regardless of their embracing of logic over all else and suppressing their emotions. But this is something even more strange outside of that. And I'm so curious to know what's going on.
Yeah, like when Jake starts questioning T'Lyr a little bit about like, oh, you're not like most Vulcans I've met, and the way you handled the Q thing, and T'Lyr just stops him dead in his tracks and says, stop. I must ask a favor. Don't ask about that. Just, I'm T'Lyr, a Vulcan of Starfleet. And that explains it all, or at least dismisses it all. And I'm very curious as to what's going on.
Oh, yes. And it even is, yeah, we have more to talk about on that front.
Mm-hmm. For sure. I will also say, though, I love the chemistry between Jake and T'Lyr. And I hope we see more of that explored, because I think they're really cool together. Sharing that ballroom dance through Q's, whatever was going on in that issue, getting through that whole crisis. I think, yeah, they're a pretty cool pairing, and I'd like to see more of them. Whatever form that takes, like, I, you know, best friends, perhaps a relationship of more of whatever. I think Jake is going to be the person that T'Lyr ultimately opens up to about whatever all of this is. And I would love to see them grow closer for that.
I agree completely, because I've been feeling the same way. I just want to see more of them together in whatever form that takes.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, they're going to have to set out to Cardassia, because they're wanting to track down some of these orbs, which the Cardassians still have a few of them. So they're going to head out to Cardassia. We've got the kind of goodbye between Sisko and Cassidy, which is very fraught with heavy feelings, as we've talked about. And I love this kind of montage of, I would say, like, the last night before this mission, basically. We've got the baseball game in the holosuite, hanging out at Quark's, Shaq's working out, and if you notice, the kettlebell weights there are labeled ransom, so either on loan or Shaq's appropriated a few for this mission.
Oh, they work out together. Jack would have just loaned them.
Totally, yeah, I think so. And and hanging out at Vic Fontaine's, that was really cool to see too, so... nice little, it's just that little bit of a breath before we got to jump back into this mission now, which brings us to Cardassia, and Cardassia is under attack by other Cardassians.
You know, see, that's what happens. And that's what happens in every kind of war. Like, take America's Revolutionary War, right? United against a common enemy, defeat that enemy, obtain our liberation and our independence from Britain. And then what do? We turn on each other.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is what happens. You can have, you know, it happens time after time after time throughout history. Look at any country that has fought for liberation from another power, and then see what happens to that country afterwards. It almost always is a civil war.
Yeah, absolutely. Conflict begets conflict, and it's never-ending cycle. And if only one person can stand up and do something to end that cycle. I wonder if we're going to see somebody try to do that in this story.
Could be, maybe. I don't know.
Could be, yeah. Well, the Theseus drives off these attacking forces because of Sisko's amazing attack patterns. And okay, sure. All right. By that. And they get through, and the forces retreat. They get invited down to the capital city of Cardassia by the first speaker. And once they get there, they find out that that first speaker is Barada Damar, the nephew of our revolutionary Cardassian from the end of Deep Space Nine, Casey Biggs. Love Damar. Great character.
Yep.
This guy's a little different, though. And he places Sisko under arrest. And that's basically how this issue ends.
I was not surprised by that at all.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, well, Sisko's going to get arrested. Lord only knows what'll happen after that.
No. Well, we're told next is the trial of Benjamin Sisko.
Oh, and then I had to wait a month to find out.
Well, I didn't because I read this all in the last week for the first time.
Yes, I know. It is. It's really nice to have the issues in these chunks now because I can just zoom right through them.
Mm-hmm. So let's jump into issue number 8 now. We've got Sisko in Cardassian custody and he's choosing to remain there to stand trial. Basically, he tells Data he's going to stay and stand trial, even though they could probably break him out. They could get him out and get him away. We meet Sisko's advocate in a few minutes who would say that maybe don't try to do that. And we'll talk about Sisko's advocate in a moment, but
yeah, we will.
Oh, yes. But with Sisko staying there, Data is going to lead the Theseus to follow up on this lead from Shax to the Tongbeak Nebula, which is known apparently to the Bajorans as the Grave of the Prophets. But maybe not in the sense that it's where the prophets die. It's like the graves that are owned by the prophets, where their enemies die.
Yeah. Context is everything. Mm-hmm. Context is for kings, you see.
Absolutely. Well, okay, let's talk about Sisko's advocate because he makes his entrance here. And it is, of course, plain, simple Garrick.
Yes. Yes. Who else are you going to get?
Mm-hmm.
Not that Sisko really had a choice. But I just thought of all the Cardassians you would have, of course it's going to be Garrick.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, with his connections and his knowledge and all that, and his flair for the dramatic.
All of which comes across really well in this comic. I thought Garrick was Agreed. Drawn and written really, really well. That kind of flamboyance of his and his flowery language, you know, why one word when 10 would do kind of thing. That he does. It was really good. It was really well done.
Yes, I could hear the voice in my head when I was reading the dialogue.
And yeah, like you said, Sisko doesn't have much choice, but he's choosing to put his trust in Garrick, which we'll see how that works out. You know, I love Garrick, but trust is not really a word I associate too much with him.
Yeah, and he would be the first to acknowledge that.
Absolutely. So there's an issue on the Theseus with getting to the Tongbeak Nebula and navigating there. The conditions within the nebula would, as Paris says, the engines will make them explode, basically. Mm. But Jake has an idea inspired by his father, and they outfit the Theseus with Bajoran solar sails. Like in the DS9 episode Explorers. And that was
Yes. Beautiful. Yes. When Jake said he had an idea, I'm like, oh, please tell me it's the solar sails.
Totally. That was really cool. And Tom Paris, in the same way in which he outfitted the Delta Flyer with like dials and switches and knobs, has outfitted the helm console of the Theseus with a giant ship's wheel, which on the face of it may seem kind of ridiculous, but he has a history of doing this. And we also know from Voyager that he's a huge fan of tall ships and sailing and stuff. So I buy this. I kind of buy this. I buy this more than his weird Starfleet issue cell phone camera in the last one.
Well, and it's not the first time that we've seen a futuristic vehicle with a ship's wheel, because Strange New Worlds, the Orion ship that was pretending not to be an Orion ship had a ship's wheel.
So. Yep. That was great. I love this wooden sailing wheel, though. Like, I know some people will find it ridiculous, but I thought it was hilarious.
Hey, if you're going to do it in style.
So that brings us back to Cardassia and the trial of Benjamin Sisko. We've got Vorta, a counselor Yor, who's remained on Cardassia with a Jem'Hadar standing alongside Barada Damar. Accusing Sisko of bringing Cardassia to its knees. So they're kind of pinning the current woes of Cardassia. They're laying them at the feet of Benjamin Sisko. What do you think of that accusation?
You know, I understand it because People always want someone to blame, whether they're actually responsible for what happened or not. They need someone to point to and say, you are the reason that things are this way. And unfortunately, that's usually a situation where people are projecting their problems onto someone else who has nothing to do with it. And that's why we have so many problems with stupid people in the world. It's just like, they're just like, oh, I'm not unhappy because I am not a good person. I'm unhappy because someone tells me this person is the target of all my woes. This person is responsible for making my life hell.
Yeah.
And they have something else to point to. So it's really just, it's all about projection of one's own fears and shortcomings onto someone else. And this time it's on a much larger level than most people will face in their lives.
Mm-hmm. And I do have to say, Garrick does an admirable job in his opening argument here of arguing for Sisko. Yeah. I don't know if Sisko really appreciates Garrick saying he acted as any Cardassian would. he maybe takes a little umbrage to that. I don't know. But yeah, this is a convincing argument. And the Dominion is what really shattered Cardassia's future, as he's kind of arguing here. Interestingly, to a Vorta, he's arguing this. This Vorta's, he's stayed behind. He's older than most Vorta we see. I don't think we've ever really learned about the lifespans of Vorta, but I wonder if they're similar to the Jem'Hadar, where they're, you know, they don't probably last extremely long. I don't know. I could be wrong about that. Because they clone them, right? So there wouldn't be any reason to give them a really long lifespan. So I wonder how old this guy is.
Curious. We'll probably never know, but that's an interesting supposition.
So Yor is the counsel for the prosecution, and Damar is the judge, and he says to call their witnesses. And Yor has this endless string of Cardassian witnesses over the course of this two-page spread, which is really cool. And I loved going through this and reading it and the opposing, the interesting and different views. So like, for example, this one guy is like, the tyrant Dukat called him friend. And the next guy says, he killed the great Dukat.
Yeah, they don't have their story straight, that's for sure.
No, they're all just united in their wanting to blame Sisko for this. So I also thought it was interesting to come up with so many different variations on a Cardassian. It's very cool. You know, different facial hairs. We got this guy with these funky octagonal lenses, like glasses almost, that fit inside their ridges there, and the different hair and makeup styles. It's really cool. Interesting.
It was. That was a lot of effort. I mean, that was a lot. Because drawing all of those faces over a two-page spread, that's dozens. I mean, that's really a lot.
Mm-hmm. And at the end of all of these testimonies, the defense rests. Figures that's enough argument for why Sisko is guilty. Garrick wants to call his first witness. Damar says, you get one. So, you know, Cardassian jurisprudence, as we've learned through Deep Space Nine, is not what one would term from our perspective here as fair. The prosecution got 30 witnesses. Garrick should consider the one he gets a gift. But he calls the Jem'Hadar to the stand, which is interesting.
It is interesting, because I thought, who would he possibly call? And then he calls the Jem'Hadar, and I'm like, oh, okay, let's see where this goes.
Well, I love this, because the Jem'Hadar speaks highly of Sisko, because basically he's heard many stories of Jem'Hadar being liberated or being shown that life in service to the founders is not all that there is. And at the heart of all of those stories, or a bunch of them, was one man, Benjamin Sisko. As he says, Captain Benjamin Sisko did not seek our death. He sought our redemption. And that's true. Like, every time Sisko came across the Jem'Hadar, if there was kind of any room to negotiate there, he always tried to convince them that the founders didn't have their best interests at heart, that they were kept enslaved, and that he personally has seen Jem'Hadar who were able to shake that control. I likened it almost to in Prodigy when that member of the telepathic minority had grown up and become a Starfleet officer and let Janeway out of her cell because she was one of the telepaths saved by Voyager and Janeway. Mm-hmm. It was like these little things that these acts of goodness that took place in the series, they have these ripple effects that happen afterwards that, you know, help out the person in question. I thought that's great. It really goes to show that, like, kindness, it shouldn't be the only reason you do kindness, but it may also pay off in the future. You may get that paid back to you.
Well, that's, you know, people call it karma, but what you put out into the universe is what you will get back threefold. So if all you put out is hate, then that's all you're going to get back. But if you put out kindness, if you put out love, it is returned to you in ways that you can't possibly imagine.
Well, the assembled Cardassians don't seem to be convinced. There's like this moment of silence, like this beat. And then the place just erupts. Irrelevant! He has to pay! Death to the accused! Death to Sisko! The moment of silence, I think, is interesting as they all, like, kind of like, okay, no, but we've gotta remember what we're trying to do here. So things aren't looking great for Sisko there, but back on the Theseus, they encounter this station within the Tongbeak Nebula. And they board the station and they immediately encounter members of the Red Path. But these are Cardassian members of the Red Path who threaten the away team. So not good. That's where we're left at the end of issue number 8.
That was quite the cliffhanger. I'm like, oh, great. Cardassians with bat less great.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of cutlery being wielded
there. So much cutlery. And of course, I'm sure that Shax will just be, well, I know because I read the rest of it. Shax is just going to be, yeah, come at me.
What? That doesn't seem in character. Yeah, I guess. Well, if you're going to bring Shax into your comic, you better have him fighting and preferably fighting Cardassians. So, yeah. I feel like we might see that.
Yeah, imagine that.
Well, let's jump right into issue number 9 then. We've got Sisko in his cell. Things aren't looking great for him. And he's trying to reach out to the prophets and talk to the prophets. And he does get an answer. And it's Dukat. Dukat shows up. Whether this is in his mind or an actual encounter here. Of course it's Dukat. Of course it is. Even in this form, I could hear Mark Alimo's voice and I could hear Dukat and it made my skin crawl, which is the sign that, like, man, everything has come together. 7 seasons of this character combined with pretty good writing in this comic has made me go like, ooh, it's Dukat. Gross. Ugh.
And that was me too. I was just like, oh, come on. I was hoping I would never see this guy again. Isn't he dead?
There's a great line here too that I love. He says, "We were both touched by the divine, Benjamin. It is simply that I received the back of the hand while you were offered the front." I mean, always playing the victim, of course, but
always.
You know, like he sought it out. He wasn't punished, but he sought that out. Like, come on. But still, I love that line. That was really good.
It was really well done. And it's not something that I feel like I've ever heard before. It was just, it was perfect for the character.
Yeah. Well, Garak comes in and kind of catches Sisko talking to someone who's not there and hears that it's Dukat. And it's like, I spent quite a while fantasizing about him as well. How it might feel to slide a knife into his ribs, to see the life fade from his eyes. Interesting.
Yeah, instead he got yeeted into the fire caves.
Yeah, I'll take it. So yeah, they're going to go face the trial again. But meanwhile, we've got the Red Path people fighting the away team on Tongbeak Nor, this station in the Tongbeak Nebula. And yeah, we're going to get to see Shax fighting back, which is a lot of fun. He's Shax. What more can you say?
He's this giant hulk of a man with the heart of gold, and he is not going to let anybody hurt his team, period.
So it's, yeah, there's all this fighting going on. The away team's pinned down, and they're going to send reinforcements from the Theseus. Lieutenant Descini, who I've wanted to see more of since she was kind of in the background. And we're going to see more of her in this issue, which I'm excited about. She's going to lead the cavalry charge, basically, onto the station to help protect the away team. And she beams with her team into the melee aboard the station. And like every time Shax just yells, "Yes!" Like I can hear it. Like, the prophets say hello as he bashes two Cardassian skulls together. Oh my God. This is so much fun.
It truly, truly is.
And I love, it's kind of corny, but I love their, you know, this fighting's going on. The Red Path people are singing a Klingon war song and they're going, "What's going on?" And Tilliers says, "I'm starting to suspect that the Red Path is a pan-species cult of personality. It's honestly quite a fascinating study in cross-cultural dissemination," as he's phasering a bunch of them. And Lieutenant Descini, "Less hunching, more punching." Okay, it's cheesy, but I dig it. I dig the sentiment.
Yeah, she's a firecracker, that one. Yeah. Not getting her way.
No, absolutely. There's a little bit later on where I'll call out some of her fighting. It's pretty impressive. Tilliers kind of senses what it is that they're protecting, this Red Path people. He senses there's something down this hallway, and they're going to take a team down there to figure out what that is while Descini and her team continue holding off the enemy. So back on Cardassia, we get Sisko speaking one last time in his defense. And it's an impassioned speech. It's a good speech, but he ends it by saying, "You won't get justice by punishing one person, but if my death is what it takes for you to begin that journey, if my death in some way brings even one of you closure for the tragedy that was wrought, I am here." So he's offering himself up, and Damar says, "All right, well, the verdict is as it ever was," because we know the verdicts are determined before the trial in Cardassian jurisprudence, "and as it was always meant to be, guilty."
And I'm like, okay, well, how's he going to get out of this? Because you're not killing off Sisko at this point. We know this.
Yeah, I wonder. And I have to say, I was honestly, maybe not surprised, but impressed with kind of how that part of the story goes, which we'll get there, because these two stories are going to kind of converge at one point here. So back in the nebula on this station, Sato is trying to break into this vault, all the while with Shax breathing down her neck. And I loved this whole scene, mostly for Shax's reaction shot here, where, you know, she's like, "Cool, cool, cool. Okay, I'm going to try and figure this out." And things are getting dire behind her. The people are getting closer. They're getting threatened. Crusher's trying to calm her down. "You've got this." But Shax yells, "Do I need to break down that door?" And Sato, "Dude, I will break you down. Just give me a minute to do my job, okay?" And Shax's look of just like, "Oh, damn." I love that.
Yeah.
I love that she intimidated Shax. That makes me so happy.
That's the thing. Lily seems amiable most of the time, but do not press her. She will let the wildcat out.
Yes. And she does it. She does it. She manages to open it. And in there is the orb of creation and a Romulan with a sword.
Sure. Why not?
Sure. And as Shax says, "A Romulan with a sword. I've never fought one of you before."
And he's probably calculating in his mind, how fast can I take this one down?
Mm-hmm. And he says, "This is going to be fun." So they're trying to extract the orb here. Meanwhile, Shax is fighting this Romulan, and Shax has basically distracted this guy while he set his phaser rifle to overload, which is just such a Shax thing. Like, there's no warp cores to eject, so we'll overload a phaser rifle. The blast, of course, throws everybody clear. The orb box opens, and T'Lyr is looking into the orb, and that's kind of where we leave that little part of it here. And meanwhile, back on Cardassia, Sisko is in front of a firing squad, and the last word of the comic is fire. So that's it. That's the death of Benjamin Sisko, I guess. I don't see how he gets out of this one.
Yeah, I mean, it's a firing squad. Even if you manage to have one person that's not going to fire, the rest of them are.
I like this. At the end, we see Sisko, he's strung up there. And we don't, I wanted to go back and see this, but because it's not here. But when we start the next issue, it's not just Sisko that's in front of the firing squad. It's also Garak.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I didn't see him there in that issue. I was looking for him. But I like that idea that, like, you know, you get executed and so does your lawyer. That's so Cardassian.
It is so Cardassian. Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode of Positively Trek is brought to you by our supporters on Patreon. A special thank you to our Constitution class supporters, Jim Stoffel, Joyce Mirren, and Paul D. Kinnear. To help out with the podcast, visit patreon.com/positivelytrek, where for a small monthly donation, you can get early access to ad-free episodes, shoutouts, exclusive content, associate producer credits, and more. Thank you so much for listening, and live long and prosper. Which brings us, like I said, to issue 10. And we've got T'Lyr, and they're in this kind of liminal space talking with the prophets. And I love this. The prophets are like, you're not the Sisko. This is interesting. They say, I am T'Lyr, a Vulcan of Starfleet. And the prophets say, you are not. What's that about?
I know. I know. I'm just like, what is going on here?
And then T'Lyr's response back is interesting as well. They say, I am uninterested in playing a game of masks. We are each who we are. So there is a mask. Mm-hmm. That's fascinating. And then they say, I am crewman to your Sisko, an emissary in my own right. You are arms manufacturers. I love this.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah, this encounter, at the end of it, they see Sisko and Garak in front of the firing squad and hear the order given to fire. And that's when they kind of come out of the orb experience. Now, what they and the rest of the crew don't know, but we know from this next two page splash thing here, is the firing squad then turns on the assembled crowd and along with the Jem'Hadar starts shooting everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Cleaning house, apparently.
Yeah, that was great. I thought this was really clever.
I agree, because I, of all the things that I thought might interrupt Sisko's execution, this was not one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes perfect sense when you see it.
Yeah.
And you think, yeah, I should have thought of that, because all of these people testifying against him with conflicting stories, of course, mm-hmm. because Cardassians. It was a great moment.
Yeah, it was never about Sisko. It was about bringing together all of the enemies, the political enemies, as Sisko says. But it's more like the old guard of Cardassia, the ones who believed that, like, everything that Cardassia had done had been in their best interests, and it was a good thing that they were the victims of others and not taking responsibility themselves. And Damar, on the other hand, wants to create a society based on the idea that what has been done in the past was wrong and they brought it upon themselves and they need to fundamentally change. And put simply, as the Jemadar says, rot must be removed.
Agreed.
Ending that cycle of violence with a horrific act of violence, it has to be said. My brain started going to, I love the series Andor and the character played by Stellan Skarsgård, who has that great speech where he talks about like his method of doing things in the rebellion will change things and get rid of the bad people, but he will never be able to live in the society that's created from it because he's guilty of those horrific crimes. And my brain kind of went there, like, you're building a society based on justice and peace, but using these horrific methods, that's going to always be part of the DNA. So
yeah, no, I totally understand where you're coming from with that, because if we lived in a perfect society, none of that would be needed, but we don't.
Mm-hmm.
And Cardassia is really struggling with that right now after the Dominion War. And, you know, honestly, I really like that they went back to Cardassia and that we get to see what it's like, you know, 3 years after.
Yeah.
And how they're trying to rebuild, what they're trying to do, who's in charge. So I understand kind of, you know, yanking the weeds out, but at the same time, it's an imperfect thing. It's, if you do something bad for the good reason, it's one of those anti-hero things. It's, and people don't understand what anti-hero means. That doesn't mean against heroes. It means that they do things that in a less heroic way. They do what needs to be done, what heroes can't do.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have to have heroes be unblemished. But anti-heroes can go in and do the dirty work.
I do have to say, I love the way Damar puts it here, though, as well. He says, we will never be your utopian federation, nor would we ever want to be. But we will step into a future with heads held high, high enough to see that our pride is not all that matters in this universe. And then makes a comment that, you know, maybe you find my methods too Cardassian. So that'll always be a part of Cardassia, I think. But it's a step. It's a step in the right direction.
And came in a way that we didn't foresee.
No.
So well done, you guys.
I appreciated that. That was really good. But yeah, meanwhile, on Tongbeak Nor, things are looking pretty grim. And the soldiers are closing in. They're outnumbered. They're outmatched. But from behind, the soldiers of the Red Path are attacked by Sisko and Damar and the Jem'Hadar and their soldiers as well. That was great.
Yeah, saving the day. Gotta love it.
And the Jem'Hadar says, say the words, Captain, for they've never been truer. And we get this little conversation. And by the end of the conversation, we realize that the words are the Jem'Hadar battle cry. Victory is life. And I love, okay, I want to analyze this two-page splash page here of what's going on, because there's so much going on and I love it. Mm. So Sisko's shouting victory is life and firing. Talir is protecting the orb down in the corner, which is cool. The Jem'Hadar is wielding his Kartakan and taking down enemies. Shax is clubbing a Cardassian in the face with a phaser rifle, because of course he is. We've got Crusher tending to a wounded Lily, which, you know, that's just so her character and what she would be doing. If you notice, Yor, the Vorta, is sneaking away into the shadows in the background. And my favorite, Damar, is leaning against the wall with his arms folded, just watching this all smugly. Mm-hmm. I love this so much. This is my favorite bit of art in this whole collection.
Indeed. Yeah, it's, well, of course, Damar's going to stand there and watch. He's not going to risk his life. He's in charge, man. He's got to lead the people.
Well, I love all of this is going on. And we've got Dischini in the background, too, of course, being awesome and kicking a guy in the ribs. But like, mm-hmm. Damar is standing there. He's got a phaser rifle. If you notice, it's slung on his back. Oh, yeah. He's just like, yep, there we go.
Yep.
I love it. But like I said, Yor, the Vorta, is sneaking off into the background, and Sisko notices this and is following him into this vault. And you know, holds him at phaser point and is asking, like, what's going on here? What are you doing? And the Vorta, we're suspicious, right? Like, he's a Vorta. He's got some backup plan that he's going to do here. Sisko says, open that container. You know, he's got this container. Okay, well, you may regret this. What's in here isn't a weapon, but a god. And a changeling comes out of the container. The last founder left in your disgusting little quadrant, he says. Spared from the virus as well. So you're like, oh, great. He's got a god to serve. And he's going to, like, reignite the Dominion War with this founder. Nope. He's going to kill the founder. He's going to just phaser him. You taught us this, Captain Sisko, basically. He and the Jem'Hadar have completely shaken the yoke of the founders, including killing one of them. That was, again, twice in one issue, they've surprised me. Like, I honestly thought, yep, this Vorta is up to no good. He's going to try and reignite the Dominion War and all this stuff. No, he's just taking care of unfinished business.
Yeah, and I like it when he's talking and the changelings, you know, like, all haughty and whatnot, and then he's just like, wait, what? And then that's the end.
I love...
Bye-bye.
I love a good, wait, what moment. Yes. And if you could get a changeling to go, wait, what?
I know, right?
So good.
That brought me... That shouldn't have brought me such great joy, but it did.
And yeah, this shot of your phasering this changeling while the Jem'Hadar stands in the background grinning. That... That's a, like, when have you ever seen a Jem'Hadar smile? Not often.
Yeah. I couldn't actually put my finger on a specific time.
So, yeah, they've got the Orb of Creation now, and we've got basically another little bit, what seems to be a bit of a respite before the next big chapter. But that next chapter is going to come fast because there's that transmission from Worf on the Defiant that we got at the end of the Defiant Volume 1. And of course, they end the issue by warping off to Kronos to join the Defiant there to counter Kalis and his Red Path. So I guess this is all leading to the Day of Blood.
Day of Blood. It's going to be very bloody.
I would imagine so, yeah. So that's kind of the end of this little arc of the story before we get to Day of Blood. But we do also have another issue in this collection, the Star Trek Annual, which takes place basically while the Theseus is warping to Kronos. They make mention of that at the beginning. They're trying to get across two sectors of space as fast as possible. Yet they have some time to deal with some stuff in this issue, which is good. We'll talk about that. But yeah, there's some downtime while they're kind of trying to get there. Scotty's hard at work in engineering. We've got Sisko and the crew on the bridge. They're kind of stressing about all of this. But in Dr. Crusher's quarters, they're playing Dungeons and Dragons.
Yes! I love it!
That made me so happy. So we'll talk more about that because there's more to do with that. But we get this bit of the comic where we see different locations. So we've got the bridge. Tom Paris and Lily are talking about helming a ship and surfing and that kind of thing. And then we get a bit on the maintenance deck with Talir walking through this. And this is something you brought up because this is a bizarre moment. Adding to the bizarre moments surrounding Talir and what's going on with them. First of all, they're talking to something or someone. They say, can you hear me in these quiet places? In the static, I listen. In the thrum of engines and the snap of converters. I wish that I could hear you. Feel the sun of our world. The warmth of your presence. I wonder, am I the last? Please, do not let me be the last.
The last what?
What?
I need to know.
I just had a theory formulated in my head.
Oh.
I'm wondering if they are carrying a Katra. That one line, I wish that I could hear you, feel the sun of our world, the warmth of your presence. Now, if we take that to mean their world of Vulcan, maybe there's something else. But if we take that as Vulcan, that leads me to think of like, can I hear you, your presence? Maybe there's supposed to be another presence in his head, maybe a Katra. I wonder. But do not let me be the last. I don't know what that means.
I don't either. Also, that T'Lyr wears a mask, that they are not T'Lyr, a Vulcan of Starfleet.
That's another thing that,
Yeah, I just don't know. And I want to know.
Mm-hmm.
You're not giving me enough clues.
I kind of love that. I'm so curious. But meanwhile, in Dr. Crusher's quarters on deck 3, this is my new favorite thing. They're playing Dungeons and Dragons or some analog thereof. It's Sisko, Shax, Data, and Crusher. And Dr. Crusher is playing this character who punches through doors of this vampire home, I guess. She's playing Hammerax, this character who hates vampires. And
sounds like a barbarian. She's probably playing a barbarian.
Absolutely. And then Shax is playing a character called Dulane Silverhand, using Crusher's Hammerax as a distraction to steal all the gold. And Data is being such a stickler for the rules. So you do not know that there is gold, as you have yet to. And Shax slams the table. The vampire has gold and it shall be ours. And poor Spot. This is my favorite pieces of art too. Oh my God. But then capping it off with Sisko leaning back and saying, that's it. I'm not healing any of you.
So that would mean that Shax is a rogue, and that Sisko's playing a cleric or possibly a paladin. Actually, it could also be playing a druid, but chances are it's a cleric.
This is so much fun. I want to see more of this. I want to see a whole comic of them just playing D&D. I would be okay with that.
Yes. Yes. I love that that's their game of choice. And we already know that they were playing something similar on the Cerritos. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I just, I love, though, that it was just straight up old school stuff. You know, no video component in this case.
Yeah, and no like 24th century pastiche over it. They're invading a vampire's home or something. Okay.
Yep.
Cool.
Yep. And Data being the dungeon master, of course.
So great.
Probably the best person for it because he can keep everything straight. Being a dungeon master is no small thing.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah.
Because you have to anticipate the things that you can't really anticipate. You have to be prepared for your story to not go the way that you laid it out, because you have all of these other people that you don't know what they're going to do. And that's part of the fun of it, but it's also can be terrifying. I could never be a DM. My husband Dave is a great DM, and I don't know how he did it. I really don't. Because I feel like I would just freak out the moment that somebody's decided, I'm going to actually go down this path. I don't have anything. That's just a big void in my head right now. No, that would be me.
I've brought this up on the podcast before, but I need to talk about this again. I have like a whole starter set for the Star Trek Adventures roleplay game from Modiphius. And I've had it for years. It's all still in plastic. I've not played. I don't have anybody to play with. Or that's not true. I have people that would, but I just don't have time to play it. And I haven't learned any of it. And it makes me very sad. I really would love to do that.
Well, just remember, you can play with online people too.
I know. It's the time thing. That's the big one.
I know. But it's such a great way to pass some time. I mean, playing role-playing games is just, it's an experience like nothing else when you're doing it with actual people and you're rolling actual dice and such. There's just nothing else like it.
It looks like so much fun. I really need to figure that out. Anyway, we've got Scotty in engineering, you know, having some drinks and singing some songs. An alert comes over the computer. Scotty initially thinks it's because his singing might have been bad, but it turns out to be something else. There's a message, and it just says, "Scotty, we have a problem. Bring help. Jim." And he's like, "Well, that's interesting. What's this all about?" And it has to do with the photonic analysis lab using up a ton of power. And so he assembles the crew. There's him, Cisco, Crusher, Data, Shax, T'Lyr, Paris, and Lily are all assembled outside the analysis lab. They go in, and it's James T. Kirk on the bridge of the NCC 1701 Enterprise.
Okay, am I the only person that thought, seriously, you're taking all the bridge crew? All of them? What happens if something goes wrong in there and y'all die?
Well, it's just...
Is that really smart?
It's just a holodeck. It couldn't harm people, right?
Oh, yeah, because the holodeck safeties are never turned off.
No, I'm not...
The holodeck never malfunctions.
No, I don't think so. That would seems unprecedented to me.
Yeah, that was my first thought is, why are you taking all the big wigs? What the hell's wrong with you?
I do love this, though. Like, they go onto the bridge, and I love that Lily is just, like, fanning out over, holy crap, it's Captain Kirk!
It's adorable.
I love
it's
it.
It's adorable.
And Scotty's like, you look like a Hollywood star. Were you always this handsome? And Lily says, visual scans point to yes. It's really cute. I love it. But,
Boy.
Yeah, this is basically an embodiment of this emergency computer protocol that's designed to basically come into operation when, as Scotty says, the TCS is undergoing a full-scale catastrophic computer systems failure. So something's going on with the photonic systems, and this is like a safeguard computer algorithm that's going to help them out, I guess. So he's being cagey, though, as to what the actual issue is, which is really weird.
Yeah, that was a big red flag for me up front. I'm like, what are you not saying?
Mm-hmm.
What are you not saying, you little hologram?
But they soon come under attack, and I love Paris here. My Constitution class colored button 101 is a little rusty, but I'm 90% positive we have ships incoming. The little flashing lighted buttons that seem to always tell the crew what's happening.
In primary colors, of course.
Mm-hmm. And we get this page of the original Enterprise, Kirk's Enterprise, being attacked by, and we've got the Enterprise G from Star Trek Picard, the Star Trek 2009 Enterprise, the Reliant, the Enterprise D, the Cerritos, the Defiant, the NX-01, the Voyager, Pike's Enterprise from Strange New Worlds, and also Zefram Cochrane's Phoenix, just kind of zipping around.
'Cause why not? Why the hell not?
Yeah, why not? And the program starts kind of malfunctioning, and the crew is getting split up into all these different environments. And I love this because we've got Kirk, Cisco, and Scotty on the Strange New Worlds version of the 1701. As Scotty says, this is the Enterprise before her 5-year mission refit. So, oh yeah, there we go. We get some acknowledgement that it was changed to look like the 60s version after Strange New Worlds. We've got Lily ending up on the bridge of the NX-01, which...
Of course.
Of course. We've got Data and T'Lyr on the bridge of some unknown starship. It's entirely unknown. I don't recognize this at all. It's the Discovery, of course, and Paul Stamets is there.
And so is Tilly.
And Tilly, yes. We've got Dr. Crusher and Shax on the sailing ship Enterprise from the beginning of the 24th century part of Generations, which you think Crusher would have recognized that. And I kept waiting for her to make some comment about being shoved overboard by an android, but that doesn't happen. And Tom Paris ends up in the cockpit of the Phoenix with Zefram Cochrane, and he's absolutely thrilled about that.
And who wouldn't be?
Of course.
Pilot to pilot, man.
So, yeah, they kind of have to suss out all these clues and figure this all out. There's doesn't seem to be a normal malfunction. They're getting attacked by people. Paul Stamets is Stamets-ing all over them, as Tilly would say. And yeah, they're making references to the captain's log, and it becomes clear there's kind of this document they need to find, right? This either book or something needs to be translated on the NX-01. Also, Lily Sato, I love her. She sees Hoshi Sato and is like, my great, 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 great grandmother is kind of hot. And I was like, she's got this like cute animated look to her, and I didn't notice this till later, but her comm badge is even turned into a heart. How did I not notice that before? I love that.
That's adorable. I didn't notice that either.
It's so great. Because I just saw it just now, and I was like, oh, it's upside down for, oh, I see.
Well, the most curious thing for me at this point was the fact that they've tried to shut the holodeck down by saying computer in program, and the computer says that there's no program running.
Mm-hmm.
So what the what
mm-hmm.
was basically, okay, but there's holograms and simulations happening here, so what, but no programs running, so how is this happening?
Yeah.
Well, we're going to find out.
Like I said, there's this thing that they keep leading them to. So on the old sailing ship, it's the written captain's log. On the Phoenix, it's this book in the glove box. I love that the Phoenix has a glove box. On the NX-01, it's this document that needs to be translated, and it turns out to be Photons Be Free, the program written by the Doctor on Voyager. The kind of holo novel to inspire holograms to stand up for their rights. And that's what's happening on this ship. The holograms have read this and are standing up for their rights and wanting to be free. So yeah, they're gonna go along with it. That seems like a good idea. Like, yeah, we can do that. But this subroutine that is embodied by James T. Kirk is dead set against this. And you see little clues that like he's not wanting to go along with this until eventually he pulls a phaser and says, no, I can't let you do this. It goes against everything I believe in. It's the entire reason I exist. It's my programming. I can't let you do this. But Scotty manages to talk him down, and he can be free as well.
Yeah, It's still a tricky thing, the rights of holograms, because, you know, you think, oh, this is just a construct. But what happens when it becomes self-aware? It's no longer just a hologram. That mm-hmm. is now a sentient being, regardless of what form it takes.
Yeah. So they find this planet, and their choice of planet is obviously not limited by it has to be class M, blah, 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 blah. They're holograms. They don't need to breathe an oxygen atmosphere. They can create in any environment they want on this barren world. So, yeah, they're basically furnished with holographic emitters and an ability to create a holographic environment, and left behind on this planet to kind of start a new life. And my brain was kind of going to like the holograms that are given to the Hirogen, who eventually turn on them in Voyager. Kind of a similar idea story here, but less of a revolution and more of an evolution, which I kind of thought was interesting. But yeah, I really like this. And on the surface of this planet too, we get to see like all these familiar characters who've been recreated. Like we see Tendi, Spock, Burnham, a whole mess of doctors, including T'Ana and Crusher and McCoy and M'Benga and Guinan. There's Guinan. I love the kind of Easter eggs of who all's here. That's really cool. Oh, I see Saru. There's Saru. Oh, there's Pike in the beep chair. I didn't notice that before.
Oh, no. Oh, wow. Wow. I need to go over that with my reading glasses on.
Yeah. Just really... Oh my God. I just saw the salamanders.
The kids. Janeway and Paris have their kids.
I just see two, so maybe it's just holographic versions of Janeway and Paris.
Okay, that's fair. But still, you know, I'm never going to forgive Chakotay for leaving those kids behind.
Right? That's crazy. The view of this new colony pulls out and we see it's in the shape of a Starfleet Delta on the surface of the planet, which is kind of cool, I guess. And meanwhile, Scotty has joined the Dungeons and Dragons folks as well, which I really enjoyed.
Oh, please, more of the crew playing Dungeons and Dragons. Please, please, please give it to me.
Yes, absolutely. So this issue in particular, I loved. I really, really liked the artwork in this one. I feel like William Shatner as Kirk, and especially the young Kirk, is really hard to capture. There were a few shots where it was just absolutely uncanny, like amazing job. And Scotty as well. Some of the big close-ups with his facial expressions were so good in this one.
Indeed. I think they really went all out with this. And in fact, like when they first end up on the Strange New Worlds Enterprise, and you see in the distance someone pointing phaser at them and telling them to freeze or whatever... you know that's La'an.
Yeah.
You know it.
Oh, yeah.
It does. She doesn't even have, you can't even tell. I mean, she's far enough in the distance that she doesn't have really defined features. But you know it's La'an.
Oh, yeah.
Immediately.
So good.
It's just, it's really impressive. It was really impressive artwork. And it was hard work. This issue has a lot of hard artwork in it. Mm-hmm. It's that's just that view of everyone on the planet. It's just, it's mind-boggling.
Yeah.
That they can create enough detail that you know who it is without having it be super close up. Mm-hmm. So, and speaking of capturing that James Kirk, my friend Steffi did one of the covers, the alternate covers for this issue, and I'm showing it to you.
Oh wow! Because
she is an amazing artist, absolutely amazing.
That is incredible. Yeah,
she really. Captures. She always does this. She's the best at capturing characters. She has this whole series of MASH characters that she did over the last year or so that it's just she gets their soul. She gets it in there. She's just so good. And so I was so happy that she got to do a Star Trek cover.
Oh, that's so cool. That's awesome. We know a few Star Trek cover artists now. That's really cool.
We do.
Awesome. Well, I guess kind of almost separate from the other four issues, this one is really, even though it kind of, it takes place in that same, kind of feels a little bit separate. So I want to say, I think the first four issues or, you know, issues 7 to 10 of the ongoing series, definitely enjoying it. Not as much as Defiant, but I think I enjoyed them more than that first set, Godshock. There were some things in that, especially art-wise, with a couple of the issues that I just really disliked in that first batch. And with this one, also story-wise, I think hangs together a little bit tighter. I enjoyed this definitely more, but Defiant is still where my heart is with this series so far. How about you?
Agree. I agree. There were some moments in this, these issues, like where there was a close-up of Tom Paris, and I'm like, if I didn't know that this was Tom Paris, could I look at this artwork and say, that's Tom Paris? And I don't think that I necessarily could. It's just, it's like they're not putting in, all you have to do is put in one little feature, really. You know, you can draw something pretty basic, but then there's one defining feature for every character that lets you know, oh, yes, that's who that is. And I just didn't see that in a lot of the artwork in this series, basically, so far. I feel like that's just going to continue. I don't expect that art style to change. So I will just have to be fine with it and enjoy the story.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like for me, the art is still a little bit lackluster, especially in those four issues. Like, there's some characters that, because they're so unique looking, you just kind of automatically know who they are. Like Sisko, bald guy with a goatee. Okay. You know, if you can kind of hit those, you know, it's Sisko. But the art in the annual edition was just so next level that like, you know, I talked about Kirk and Scotty, but also Sisko, like he's got this look in his eyes that when an artist captures it perfectly, you're like, that is Avery Brooks as Sisko. And there were a few in the other issues where like he raises his eyebrow a certain way and I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, I see that there. But in the annual issue, there was not one shot of any of the characters where they did not look so much like the people they're supposed to be. They looked so good in that issue.
Agree.
So yeah, my huge props to the artist for the annual issue. And the other ones, not bad, but not the best.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. I agree on all points.
Well, that wraps us up for the Star Trek ongoing series for a little while, because we've got a bit of time before the Star Trek Day of Blood omnibus issue comes out, which collects a few issues of Defiant and a few issues of Star Trek and mashes them all together and gives us that kind of what I'm guessing is going to be the culmination of this Kalis god killing story arc. So really looking forward to that. That'll be kind of later in the year that we get to that. In the meantime, though, of course, we have lots more to talk about on the Positively Trek book club. We've got a collection of short stories from the Star Trek Explorer magazine coming out soon. We've got David Mack's new novel, Star Trek Firewall, coming out in a couple weeks. Those will all get episodes. And of course, Brandy will be back to talk about more comics, because I think the next one we have to talk about in a few weeks' time is Star Trek Deep Space Nine, The Dog of War, which I have not read, but I'm very excited to.
I am looking forward to that.
Excellent. Well, we will definitely have you back on for that. And until then, as always, stay positive and keep reading. Positively Trek is produced and edited by me, Dan Gunther, and co-produced by Barry DeFord on Treaty 8 territory, the home of the Beaver, Cree, Dene, and Métis people, whose histories, languages, and cultures we respect. We acknowledge the many First Nations, Métis, and Inuit who have lived in and cared for these lands for generations.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.